perhaps it is for the best. I've heard the young caliph has lived a life of profound loss. If Shahrazad can...
I will not leave Shazi in the arms of a murdering madman.
Omar blinked hard. The heavy creases of his eyelids rose and fell with a purposeful weight.
Tariq, why are you doing this? Why are you fighting this battle?
Because I love her, Tariq said without hesitation.
But why do you love her?
What kind of a ridiculous question?
It is not a ridiculous question. It is a very simple one. The difficulty lies in the answer. Why do you love her?
Because, Tariq rubbed at the back of his neck. All of my most cherished memories are of her. I've suffered alongside her, and we've laughed at nothing together.
Omar's hand fell from Tariq's shoulder.
A shared history does not entitle you to a future, my friend.
How could I expect you to understand? Tariq said. No one ever tried to take Aisha from you. No one.
I do not have to lose my wife to understand the meaning of loss, Tariq. A child with a broken toy understands such things.
Anger coiled through Tariq's chest. Are you likening my suffering to that of a child?
Omar shook his head with a bemused smile.
Loss is loss, and the lesson is always the same.
I am not in the mood for a lesson.
Nor am I, Omar laughed. So I will share a story instead.
Please don't.
On a clear night, many years ago, I watched 1,000 stars fall from the sky. I was only a small boy, but I possessed a very curious heart, so I decided to chase them into the desert, far beyond the horizon. You see, I wanted to know where stars went when they fell. I ran and ran until I could run no more, and still I could not see where the stars went.
Your story is a lesson, Omar, Tariq said in a flat tone. I am not that big a fool.
Omar grinned.
Did I ever tell you that, to this day, I still fight the urge to chase falling stars?
I can well understand it, as I'm currently fighting the urge to flee.
Omar threw his head back and laughed.
Not until our lesson concludes, my young friend. You cannot rob an old man of this well-deserved right.
No, I cannot. Despite the heaviness around his heart, Tariq could not help but smile.
Conclude your lesson, my esteemed Effendi.
Some things exist in our lives for but a brief moment, and we must let them go on to light another sky.
Tariq stared into the darkness beyond the enclave of tents.
You want me to leave things as they are. But I can't. I won't. And I will always respect your choice, Tariq John. Though we may disagree, I shall try to offer whatever support I can. Come with me. Your uncle is waiting for you.
Uncle Reza is here?
Tariq looked over Omar's shoulder.
He arrived 2 days ago with your friend Rahim and has been anxiously awaiting your return ever since.
Omar led Tariq to the entrance of the largest tent in the desert enclave. He pushed aside the flap, and the two men stepped inside.
Our prodigal hero has returned, Omar announced, as he strode to the back corner and took a seat beside Reza with a jocular flourish.
Tariq removed his shoes and discarded his cloak before pacing farther into the semi-darkness. The patchwork of carpet at his feet was soft and worn. It mirrored the dark collage of woven fabric shaping the walls of the tent around him. A thin haze of smoke suffused the air about his head. It smelled of tobacco and molasses.
Come, have some tea,
Omar said with a smile. I've been having the most wonderful time with your uncle these past few days, for he is quite fond of love stories as well.
Tariq sat on the woolen cushions around a knotted wood table with a silver pot of tea, several etched glasses, and a towering gailan. The gailan was made of deep green glass, with a long pipe wrapped in copper silk, snaking around the table to Reza bin Latif's outstretched palm. The coal atop it burned bright orange as he puffed on the carved mouthpiece, and the water within its glass basin bubbled at a slow roil. The sweet smoke rose into the air, curling into tendrils of blue-gray, mingling into the haze above.
Uncle. Tariq extended his hand toward Reza, and Reza took it.
You have been quite busy, Tariq John, Reza said quietly.
Tariq inhaled through his nose.
I know you asked me to wait at Talakan for your missive.
Reza continued puffing on the gailan in silence. But I could not allow you to do all the work, Tariq finished.
See, I told you, he is quite the hero already, Omar cackled.
Part of being a hero is knowing when to be still, Reza countered. In response, Tariq said nothing, and Omar laughed heartily.
So what did you learn in this foolhardy excursion to Ray?
Reza asked.
I learned I have a great deal to learn.
Reza passed Omar the pipe.
What else?
I learned the Caliph of Khorasan is dangerous, in addition to being a madman.
How so?
He's smart for a madman, rather surprising.
Madmen tend to be.
Omar's eyes glittered in the shadows as streams of smoke emitted from his nostrils.
What else? Reza asked.
Tariq leaned back into the cushions.
He's arrogant and he has a quick temper.
What of weaknesses? Reza prodded.
Tariq hesitated.
Tariq?
Before Tariq could respond, the flap of the tent opened once more, and Rahim stepped beneath its wing, with Jahandar al-Khaizuran in tow. The three men seated around the gailan gazed their way. Rahim shot Tariq an apologetic glance, and Jahandar cleared his throat with a cough.
May I join you? Jahandar asked.
Omar smiled brightly.
Of course, you are most welcome.
Tariq rose from the table, trying his best to conceal his irritation as Jahandar crossed the carpets. He bowed his head with a hand to his brow.
Jahandar Effendi?
Tariq John. Jahandar looked into the silver eyes, eager and hopeful. When he was met with nothing but steely judgment, his face fell to the soundless specter of shame. Once everyone was seated again, Reza resumed his line of questioning.
You were speaking of the boy king's weaknesses?
Tariq inhaled protractedly.
Yes, uncle.
Reza's frown deepened at Tariq's obvious discomfort.
Tariq John, what?
Sherzad,
Tariq ground out.
He cares about Sherzad.
Reza's face was expressionless.
A great deal?
I don't know. I only know that he cares, and that I wish to take her out of there, now.
At this, Reza's eyebrows arched.
Did something happen while you were there?
Every day she's in that palace, she's at risk. I cannot abide it any longer.
Such a hero,
Omar laughed softly. Reza raised his glass of tea to his lips and took a sip.
I understand your concern, but...
Please, uncle, let me do this, help me.
Reza stared back at his nephew, calm in his assessment.
I'm sorry, Tariq John, but we are just beginning to gather our strength.
We are nowhere near laying siege to a city like Rey. The Emir of Karaj has pledged 700 soldiers, as well as a large cache of weapons. They should be arriving soon. His friend from the north is sending 200 more, and I am in contact with numerous other friends of mine. Men of trade and means, who are weary of being ruled by a cruel tyrant, by a boy king who kills without reason. They are willing to unite under the banner of the White Falcon. They are willing to fight for you.
Then if you would give me a few...
No. If all of these men are willing to fight, it must be for something more than your love, Tarik. You cannot march into the biggest city in Khorasan with a fledgling army just to save one girl. Be a true leader. Be still. You must wait. When the time comes, your patience will be manifestly rewarded. Trust me. Tarik closed his eyes and clenched his fists, fighting to control a rising tide of emotions.
Omar!
Omar sighed.
Ah, my friend, you do so prey upon my fondness for love stories. Alas, I am an old man, without brothers or sons, the last of my line. I will not fight. It is too hard to wash away blood from an old sword. Know that I would gladly risk my lowly life for love. But the lives of my people, and those who ride under my name, I cannot risk such a treasure. I'm very sorry, my friend.
Tarik drank his tea in silence as Omar and his uncle moved the discussion along to other matters. Their words drifted around him, echoing in his ears, filtering up into the smoke, meaningless. When the tea grew cold, Tarik took his leave. The anger continued roiling within him like the water in the Yalan. And each time he thought of the boy king, he saw eyes that burned like the coal atop its tower. A madman with a temper and a penchant for death. And Sherzad's face at peace in his arms.
Tarik Jan, a meek voice called out from behind him.
What? Tarik whirled around. Jahandar backed away, his mouth agape and the ends of his wispy beard curling in the balmy night breeze. Tarik exhaled with care.
I'm sorry, Jahandar Effendi. Forgive me.
Jahandar shook his head.
No, no. I apologize for disturbing your thoughts.
It's fine. Tarik gritted his teeth. I should learn to control them better. Jahandar nodded. He gathered his hands before him, fidgeting with the front of his tikka sash.
Is there something you wish to discuss with me? Tarik asked.
Yes. Jahandar swallowed. Yes, there is. He straightened his shoulders and clasped his hands still.
Are you willing to do whatever it takes to save my daughter?
Tarik's gaze widened. He took a step forward.
You know I am.
Jahandar's eyes shone in the surrounding torchlight.
Then let me help you.
Someone who knows. It was the muted groan of the door that woke her. Sherazad could recognize it, even in her sleep. But this time something was different. Something was in her room. Something brash and unafraid. Eyes watched her, unwanted eyes. Tiny pinpricks ran down the back of her neck and the blood coursed through her body, ignited by fear. The hush of footfall nearby forced her to make a sudden decision. Sherazad opened her eyes and screamed, filling the darkness with sound and shock. Footsteps rushed at her, and she scrambled across the cushions in an effort to escape. She yanked the gossamer aside, cursing its pointless existence. Her heart clamored in her chest at the sight of Despina's door cracking open across the chamber.
Sherazad?
Hulking shadows began to move about her room, shadows cloaked in more than night.
Oh God, Despina.
Sherzad grabbed the stool next to her bed and screamed again, trying to draw them away from her handmaiden. If Despina could make it past the door of the chamber. When a hand reached for Sherzad, she swung the stool in its direction.
Sherzad! Despina cried. Go!
Sherzad yelled. Despina rushed for the double doors as two shadows converged on her. She managed to yank one open and race into the marbled hallways of the palace. A single terror-fueled word echoed in her wake.
Jalal!
The shadows descended on Sherzad, and one seized her from behind. When it pulled her closer, a pair of angry male eyes glittered at her from above a black mask. She pitched the stool at his head. He caught it with a whispered oath and struck her across the cheek with the back of his hand. Sherzad reeled to the marble, her eyes tearing at the burgeoning sting. When another shadow tried to haul her to her feet, she reached out and snatched the cloth off his face. He lifted her by the throat and shoved her against the wall.
Who are you? What do you want?
She kicked and scratched at him. More footsteps pounded down the corridors outside her room. Both doors were shoved aside in doleful protest, revealing a lone figure and the silhouette of a sword.
Khalid.
Her captor began to laugh, low and cruel, as he cinched his hold on her neck. Khalid did not ask questions. He did not try to negotiate. His shamshir flashed in the darkness, and a shadow near the door fell with a gurgle and a series of sickening thuds. A moment later, Jalal burst across the threshold with the Rajput on his heels.
Take Khalid out of here! Jalal shouted to the Rajput.
With a dismissive shove, the Rajput pushed past Jalal and raised his talwar. Khalid brandished his sword and moved forward. The shadows congregated in his path. There were at least 8 of them, including the one pinning her to the wall. The sound of blades being drawn from their sheaths rippled through the chamber, and the man grasping Sherzad by the throat pulled her back against him, wrapping a forearm of corded muscle around her neck. The Rajput engaged the vanguard of shadows, and Khalid and Jalal flanked him on either side. Weapons clashed against one another, metal to metal, and death sliced through the air, leaving behind blood and vengeful wrath. The shadows were losing. Sherzad's captor began dragging her to the open screens leading to the terrace. His hold loosened, and she managed to twist an arm free. She swung a haphazard fist at his face. It caught him in the jaw, and she spun around to bolt. He lunged at her, snagging a shoulder in one hand and the back of her neck in the other.
"I'll kill you for that," he spat in her ear.
"Says a dead man," she rasped. "Not just yet." He slid his hand from her neck into her hair and coiled his fingers through to the roots, positioning her as a shield before him. Sherzad bit back a gasp as her eyes began to water.
"Khalid ibn al-Rashid!" he bellowed.
When her vision cleared, Jalal and the Rajput stood a body's length away with their weapons at the ready. Khalid slashed his sword a final time, and the blood of his opponent spewed across his bare chest and face in lines of dark red. Then he crossed the room, his eyes awash with rage, and the silver of his sword dripping crimson. The marauding shadows were silent and motionless now. As Khalid stalked closer, the hand in her hair tightened its grasp. Her captor pulled up sharply, and it tore a cry from her lips. Jalal swore an oath, and the blade of his scimitar gleamed white on a moonbeam. Khalid halted in his tracks. Her captor laughed, and it was like stone against metal. With his other hand, he positioned a small dagger to her throat.
"Not a single plea," he whispered in Sherzad's ear.
"I don't beg," Sherzad retorted, "especially to dead men." "And the mighty Caliph of Khorasan," her captor said into the night, "does the King of Kings have any pleas?" Again, Khalid stalked toward them in brutal silence, raising his shamshir across his body. Don't move, you bastard son of a whore. Her captor exploded, or I'll slice a maggot hole across her throat. You can watch her die, just like your mother.
Khalid froze in time. Then Shahrazad watched his face shatter.
The eyes of molten amber faded to dull memory, faded to ruin. His raw anguish seared her soul and robbed her of breath. The blood-stained Shamshir fell to his side.
I will kill you for that, Shahrazad choked over her shoulder. His laughter was a vicious rumble against her back.
What do you want? Khalid asked quietly. Drop your weapon. The Shamshir struck the marble with a sharp clang, without the slightest hesitation. Her captor sneered in triumph.
Tell them to drop their weapons.
Stop it! Shahrazad cried.
Look at me, Khalid, please do not listen to this animal.
Her captor withdrew his hand from the back of her head and seized Shahrazad's chin, angling her jaw higher, pressing his dagger closer.
Jalal, Bikram, do as he says.
Khalid's voice was heavy, mired in acceptance.
Khalid! Shahrazad despaired. Don't do this! Jalal, don't listen to him! You can't...
Say one more word, and I'll make certain it's your last. He shifted his hand from her chin to her mouth. Shahrazad bit down on his flesh as hard as she could. The taste of salt and sweat rushed onto her tongue. Her captor bellowed, slackening his hold. She rammed her elbow into his midsection, and his dagger slid back across her throat, leaving behind a white-hot trail. Then a pair of strong arms yanked her aside, pulling her into a blood-stained chest. Khalid's heart thudded around her, loud and fast. It raced against her cheek, each beat an unspoken promise. And for a breath of time, it was enough. The Rajput slammed her captor to the floor. Jalal shoved a knee into his torso and smashed a jeweled hilt across his jaw.
In what world did you think you could get away with this? Jalal seethed.
To my cousin? To my family? His gleaming hilt continued its punishing onslaught.
Enough!
Khalid pronounced the word with such force, such unmitigated fury, that it stilled all sound within the chamber. He reached down for his shamshir, and the blade dragged across the marble in a threatening skir. Without further prompting, Jalal stepped back from the man and strode to Shahrazad's side. The Rajput melted into the shadows nearby, his huge hands wrapped around his talwar, and his bearded features coldly feral in the moonlight. Khalid walked forward. The man was lying on the floor, blood coursing from his mouth and his nose. When he saw Khalid looming above him, he began to laugh in a broken rasp. Khalid positioned the end of the blade to the man's throat.
She was right. You are a dead man, but I'm willing to discuss degrees of pain.
The man's wheezing laughter grew louder.
Who sent you?
Khalid continued in a savage whisper.
Someone who wants to see you suffer.
Tell me, and I will spare you a measure of the pain you greatly deserve. The man coughed, and streaks of crimson spurted from his swollen mouth.
Do you think I fear you, boy?
I will ask one last time, then the answer will be torn from your lips.
You think to thwart the hands of fate? No matter how long you try to fight it, you will pay the price, Khalid ibn al-Rashid.
The man's eyes shot to Shahrazad with irrefutable significance.
We are now past words.
Khalid eased his sword into the man's neck, drawing a thin stream of blood.
In this, I am definitely my father's son.
The man's laughter turned maniacal.
You wish to know who sent me, mighty king of kings. I'll tell you,
he gasped, starting to choke.
Someone who knows.
With that, he dragged his own throat across the edge of the blade. Jalal grabbed Sherzad and tucked her face into his shoulder. Her hands shook against him, and he pressed his palm to her cheek in an effort to soothe her. The Rajput crouched beside her captor's body. He ran his depthless black eyes across the man's motionless form. Then he pulled back the dark sleeve, covering the man's right forearm. In the pale light of the moon spilling from the terrace, Sherzad saw a faint mark seared into his skin. The outline of a scarab. "A Fedayi dog," the Rajput grumbled like distant thunder. Khalid regarded the brand in silence before turning away. With a low curse, he heaved his shamshir across the room. "What?" Sherzad asked Jalal. "The Fedayis, hired mercenaries, assassins." Sherzad inhaled sharply, the questions massing at the top of her throat. Jalal peered at her neck. "My God, you're bleeding." He shoved aside her hair. Before she had a chance to react, she was lifted off her feet. Khalid dismissed her protests as he carried her away from the carnage, with Jalal and the Rajput following close behind. When they crossed the threshold, the lifeless bodies of the two royal guards positioned outside her door stared up at her with glassy eyes. Their throats were slashed to gaping maws. She stifled a gasp. "They're all dead," Khalid said without looking at her. "Every guard in this corridor is dead." She tensed her grip around his neck as he continued down the hall. Once they rounded the corner, soldiers burst through the doors led by General Al-Khoury. "Is she hurt?" the Sharban demanded in an urgent voice. "I'm fine," she replied, momentarily taken aback by his concern. "Really, I am." "She's wounded," Jalal clarified. "It's not bad," Sherzad countered. "Put me down, I can walk." Khalid ignored her. "I can walk, Khalid." Again he refused to look at her, much less respond. They moved down the hallways, with guards lighting their path, encircling them in a gleaming bastion of steel and torchfire. Deciding to cede this particular battle, Sherzad leaned against Khalid, closing her eyes to the glare for an instant, and his hold on her tightened. They turned down another, smaller corridor Sherzad had never seen before. It was lined in stone, with an arched ceiling of smooth alabaster. Soon they halted before a set of double doors made of polished ebony, hinged in bronze and iron. "Guards are to stand post here, and at the doors leading to my chamber until further notice," Khalid commanded. "Be advised. If there is the slightest breach at either entrance, you will answer to me." A guard nodded briskly before pulling on one of the bronze handles. Khalid walked through the huge ebony doorway with Sherzad in his arms. He did not put her down. Instead, he crossed a pitch-black antechamber to another set of doors identical to the first. Once they passed this threshold, they entered a vast room with a vaulted ceiling lit in its center by a single lamp of latticed gold. Khalid set Sherzad on the edge of a platformed bed covered in dull silk. Then he strode to an immense ebony cabinet positioned against the back wall, where he removed strips of spun linen and a small round container before collecting a pitcher from atop his desk. He knelt before Sherzad and brushed her hair over her shoulder to look at the wound. "I told you," Sherzad said. "It's not bad. It can't be much worse than a scratch." Khalid poured water from the pitcher onto a strip of linen. He lifted it to her neck and began cleaning the wound. Sherzad steadied his face as he worked. The dark circles beneath his eyes were even more pronounced now. Lines of dried blood ran across his cheek and brow, marring his sun-bronzed skin. His features were set on edge, and he refused to meet her gaze. The angles of his profile remained obdurate, unyielding, like the edges of a rumpled scroll, demanding to be smoothed or cast aside once and for all. When he dampened another piece of linen, Sherzad placed her hand over his and removed the cloth from his grasp. She raised the strip to his face and wiped at the dark blood of his enemy. Khalid's tiger eyes finally fell to hers. They roved across her in poignant silence as she washed away the remnants of death with steady, graceful fingers. Then he leaned forward, pressing his brow to hers, catching her hands in his, stilling them both.
"I want to send you away, to a place where none of this can touch you," he began.
Her heart shuddered, and she pulled back. "Send me away? As if I were a thing?"
"No, that's not what I meant."
"What did you mean, then?"
"I meant that I cannot keep you safe from anything."
"And your answer to that is to send me away?" Sherazade repeated in a dangerous whisper. "My answer is not an answer. It is a willingness to do whatever it takes, even something as distasteful as sending you from my side."
"And you expect me to obey? To go wherever you command?"
"I expect you to trust me." Sherazade narrowed her eyes. "You should know I will not take kindly to you treating me like a possession."
"I have never treated you like a possession, Sherazade, until you spoke of sending me away."
Khalid shifted his hands to her sides. "You're my wife. They are hurting you because of me."
"They? Do you mean the Fedayis?"
She hesitated.
"Who are they? To whom do they pledge loyalty?"
"To whoever can pay their price. Loyalty ebbs and flows with the tide. Gold does not. The men who hire them have little to offer beyond that."
"And you think it will help if you yield to such men?"
"I don't care what they think, as long as you're safe."
"You should care. It's time to start caring. You cannot continue to rule this kingdom in such a callous manner."
He smiled, bitter and unamused. "You speak as though you understand, as though you know."
"You're right. I understand nothing. I know nothing. And whose fault is that?"
Sherazade pushed against his bare chest and stood from the bed, walking past him.
"I've told you why."
Khalid rose to his feet. "It is not safe for you to know these things.
To know what?"
She spun around to face him.
"To know you? As if I could ever hope to achieve such a thing? Yet, like a fool, I've wanted to learn, to understand what pains you, what brings you joy. But I remain ignorant of even the most trivial of things. I don't know your favorite color, what foods you detest, what scent brings to mind a treasured memory. I know nothing because you fight me every step of the way."
He watched her as she spoke, his features careful, his composure deliberate, though his eyes revealed a deeper conflict he no longer fought to conceal.
"I don't know what you want from me, Sherazade. I only know I can't give it. Not now." "It does not have to be so difficult, Khalid John. My favorite color is violet. The scent of roses makes me feel at home, wherever I am. I do not enjoy fish, but will eat it to make a loved one happy. Suffering through my smiles."
He remained stone-faced, the conflict in his eyes warring on. With a beleaguered sigh, she turned and strode to the entrance.
"Good night."
Khalid was beside her in a few long strides, pressing his hand to the ebony door, preventing her from leaving.
"What do you want me to do?"
he said in a low voice. She did not look up, though her heart thrummed in her throat.
"Prove that a real man doesn't make a show of what's his. It just is."
"Is it? Are you mine?" Khalid asked with quiet solemnity. Her conviction wavered further.
"I told you, don't try to own me."
"I don't want to own you." She swiveled her neck to meet his gaze.
"Then never speak of sending me away again. I am not yours to do with as you will."
Khalid's features smoothed knowingly. "How right you are."
"You are not mine."
He dropped his palm from the door.
I am yours.
Sherazade curled her fingers tight, forcing herself to recall a time when she meant nothing to him, a time when he meant less than nothing to her, and all that mattered was blood for blood. Alas, she no longer saw the same boy before her, just light amidst a sea of darkness, and the unerring promise of something more. But she never saw the things she should see. The pain, the anger, the betrayal. These things always faded, and she despised herself for it. Before she could stop her hands, they reached for him, as though they existed for no other reason than to touch him. Her fingers brushed across his jaw with a feather's caress before pulling away, and he closed his eyes on a soft inhale. Like the poison toying with its remedy, Sherazade's hands ignored her and took control. A mere taste of his skin, not nearly enough. Never enough. They began at his brow and eased their way to his temples before sliding into his hair, smooth as silk, dark as night. She watched his eyes open and turn from liquid to fire under her fingers. Sherazade ran her palms down to his neck, where she paused.
"Why won't you touch me?" she whispered. It took him a moment to reply. "Because if I start, I won't stop." "Who asked you to stop?"
Her fingers traveled to his chest.
"What if I can't give you the answers you want?"
Again she returned to nothing. Yet there, in the warmth of his eyes, was everything.
"Then give me this."
Sherazade stood on her toes and brought her mouth to his. When he did not respond, she curved her tongue against his lower lip, and his hands drew across her waist in a slow burn. She thought he would push her away, but he dragged her against him. Khalid kissed her, melding nothing to everything. Sherazade wrapped both arms around his neck, and he backed her into the ebony door until she was braced up against it. Each of their breaths matched, measure for measure, beat for beat.
"Khalid!"
She gripped his shoulders as his lips brushed the delicate skin beneath her chin. Her heart was pounding so loud that she did not at first recognize the noise at the door.
"Saidi!"
"Khalid," she repeated, catching his wrists.
He swore softly, then he reached for the bronze handle.
"Yes."
His reply was low and irascible. The guard bowed through the crack in the door.
"The Sharban wishes to speak with you. Captain Al-Khoury may have determined how the intruders gained entry into the palace."
Khalid nodded curtly as he shut the door. He ran his palm along the side of his jaw before turning to Sherazade once more. She was leaning against the ebony with her hands clasped behind her back.
"Go," she said softly.
He paused in thoughtful scrutiny.
"Don't worry, I'll stay here."
"Thank you." As he reached for the handle again, he lingered and smiled to himself. Her brows drew together.
"What is it?"
"It's a fitting punishment for a monster, to want something so much, to hold it in your arms, and know beyond a doubt you will never deserve it." Khalid pulled open the door and stepped over the threshold without waiting for her response. Sherazade slid to the floor. The hands that had appeared steady against him now shook before her face, proof that she was being equally punished for her own transgressions, punished for desiring a monster. She offered silent thanks to the stars that dealt in fate, for her monster did not seem to know how all reason had left her for the space of a breath, how the guilt crashed down around her, and how the questions burdened her soul.
"Someone who knows."
A Shade of What I Feel. Sherazade remained in the wasteland of her thoughts, studying the prisms of light from the lamp of latticed gold. When she could no longer feel any sensation in the soles of her feet, she rose to a standing position. Her eyes wandered around the room, taking in her surroundings with the careful study of a predator to its prey. The floor was constructed of black onyx, and the walls were hewn from the same smooth alabaster as the corridor leading to the entrance of the antechamber. All the furniture was built of ebony, crafted in harsh lines. Every surface was stark and unobstructed. The bed lacked the bold surfeit of cushions Shahrazad had grown accustomed to in her own bed, that familiar lush vibrancy, yearning to be lounged upon. Like its occupant, the room appeared cold and uninviting, unlikely to offer the slightest hint of clarity. "This chamber is like a prison, once removed." She sighed to herself, and the sound susurrated back at her from the heights of the vaulted ceiling. Shahrazad paced around the perimeter of the room, her bare footsteps leaving imprints on the shining black onyx. Then, like a whisper of a suggestion, they vanished without a trace. The single lamp in the chamber's center looked eerie and forlorn. It failed to provide enough light, rendering its flickering shadows more baleful than beautiful against the cool white alabaster. It was a sad place to call a refuge, with just as unyielding an aspect as its master. The more Shahrazad gazed at the chamber, the more she realized, and the less she understood. Everything had a specific place in this room, a designated order to its existence. The only things out of place were she and the blood-stained strips of linen at the edge of the platformed bed. Any evidence of life or lingering emotions did not belong. Shahrazad strode to the bed and discarded the bloodied linen. Then she gathered the unused strips, along with the small container of salve Khalid had removed from the ebony chest upon their arrival. Its immense cabinet door was still ajar. Shahrazad walked toward it with the clean linen and the tub of salve in her arms. She tugged on one of the bronze rings and peered inside. As with the room, its shelves were meticulous in their construction and organization. Two were lined with books in descending height order, and another was stacked with scrolls bound by wax seals. A shelf at eye level contained an assortment of jars in various shapes and sizes. The empty space for the container of salve was evident, and Shahrazad replaced it, along with the strips of unused linen, in their clearly demarcated positions. As she began to shut the door, her eyes fell on a leather sleeve filled with sheets of parchment, wedged like an afterthought between two massive tomes on a shelf high above her. It seemed out of place, just like her. A small part of her knew she should leave it be. This was not her room. These were not her things. But it called to her. This collection of afterthoughts whispered her name, as if from behind a locked door with a forbidden key. Shahrazad stared up at the sleeve of leather. As with Tala and her blue-bearded husband's ring of keys, the parchment pleaded for attention. And like Tala, she could not ignore it. She had to know. Shahrazad stood on her toes and tugged on the leather sleeve with both hands. It slid from between the tomes, and she clutched it to her chest for a nervous beat before kneeling against the black onyx. Cold fear skittered down her back as she raised the fold. The sheaf of parchment was inverted and illegible, so she grabbed the stack and upended it with care. The first thing she noticed at the bottom was Khalid's formal signature, composed in clear, neat script. When her eyes skimmed across the rest of the page, she rapidly discerned it was a letter. A letter of apology, addressed to a family in Ray. Shahrazad turned to the next piece of parchment. It was another letter of apology, written to another family. As she leafed through the stack of parchment, her eyes began to swim in realization, in recognition. These were letters of apology to the families of the girls murdered at dawn by a callous hand and a silk cord. Each was dated. Each acknowledged Khalid's sole responsibility. None offered any justification for the death. No excuse. He merely apologized, in a manner so open and full of feeling that it left her throat dry and her chest aching. It was clear they were written with no intention of being delivered. Khalid's words were far too personal and introspective to indicate he ever meant for any eyes to see them apart from his own. But his unabashed self-loathing cut into Shahrazad with the effectiveness of a newly honed knife. He wrote of staring into frightened faces and tearful eyes with the abject knowledge he was robbing families of their joy, stealing their heart's blood from them, as though he had the right, as if anyone had the right. Your child is not a notion or a whim. Your child is your greatest treasure, and you should never forgive me for what I've done, as I will never forgive myself. Know that she was not afraid. When she gazed at the face of the monster sanctioning her death, she did not quail. Would that I had half her courage and a quarter of her spirit. Last night, Roya asked for a centaur. Her playing drew every guard in the corridor to her door. And I stood in the garden and listened, like the cold, unfeeling bastard I am. It was the most beautiful music I have ever heard in my life. A music that rendered all thereafter dull and colorless in its memory. Tears began streaming down Shahrazad's face. She turned the pages faster, until she found the one addressed to the family of Reza bin Latif. How does one begin to apologize for robbing the world of light? Words seem strangely insufficient in such a case, and yet I fall to their uselessness in my own inadequacy. Please know, I will never forget Shiva. For the brief moment she stared into the face of a monster, she deigned to smile and forgive. In that smile, I sensed a strength and a depth of understanding I could never hope to fathom. It tore at what professes to be my soul. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. 1,000,000 times. At your knees, and it will never be enough. Shahrazad sobbed, and the sound rang out in the chamber. The parchment shook in her hands. Khalid was responsible. Whatever the excuse, whatever the reason, he was the one. He had killed Shiva. He had robbed Shahrazad of this light. She had known it all along, but now, clutching the undeniable truth between her fingers, she realized how much she had wanted it to be a lie, how much she had wanted there to be some kind of excuse, some kind of ready scapegoat, that somewhere along the line she would discover it was not his fault. Even now, she knew how ridiculous it sounded. But it was breaking her, slowly. The wall around her heart was crumbling, leaving behind scorched embers and bleeding wounds. Her sobs grew louder. Shahrazad wanted to hurl the leather sleeve across the room, shred its contents, and deny its pernicious truths. But she lifted the next page, and the next. So many, and not a single explanation. She continued scanning the parchment, searching for a semblance of purpose behind such senseless death. Clinging to this thread of hope, she labored on, until finally her eyes fell on the last page, and her heart faltered. It was addressed to her, dated for that fateful sunrise with the silk cord. Shahrazad, I've failed you several times. but there was one moment I failed you beyond measure. It was the day we met. The moment I took your hand and you looked up at me, with the glory of hate in your eyes. I should have sent you home to your family, but I didn't. There was honesty in your hatred, fearlessness in your pain. In your honesty, I saw a reflection of myself, or rather, of the man I longed to be. So I failed you. I didn't stay away. Then, later, I thought if I had answers, it would be enough. I would no longer care. You would no longer matter. So I continued failing you. Continued wanting more. And now, I can't find the words to say what must be said. To convey to you the least of what I owe. When I think of you, I can't find the air to...
The letter stopped short there. Sherazade puzzled over it for the span of a heartbeat. Then a conversation from their past echoed around her, like a song from a distant memory.
And how will you know when you've found this elusive someone?
I suspect she will be like air, like knowing how to breathe.
The letter drifted to the floor, back to its scattered brethren. Everything around Sherazade fell to shadow and silence, to the bitterness of knowledge and the brilliance of understanding. In a rush, she was taken back to that awful dawn and the feel of the silk cord around her neck. She forced herself to recall each part of it, the silver light as it crept across the blue blades of grass, the mist in the early morning sun, the penitent soldier with the burly arms, and the old woman with the fluttering shroud. The fear, the anguish, the nothingness. But now, as she closed her eyes, her mind conjured a parallel world of sorrow, of a boy king at his ebony desk, writing a letter to a dying girl, with the sun ascending at his shoulder. Of this boy halting in unexpected awareness, with his hand poised over the parchment. Of him racing down the corridors, with his cousin at his heels, bursting into a courtyard of silver and gray, punctuated by black ink and burning agony. Wondering if he was too late. Swallowing a tortured scream, Sherazade threw the sleeve and its contents across the shining onyx. Her own awareness had risen like the dawn at her back, like a leaden sunrise veiled in a swirl of storm clouds. It was no longer enough to have answers for Shiva's sake. Indeed, it had ceased to be about mere vengeance the moment Khalid's lips touched hers in the alley by the souk. She had wanted there to be a reason for this madness, needed there to be a reason, so that she could be with him, so that she could be by his side, make him smile as she laughed, weave tales by lamplight, and share secrets in the dark, so that she could fall asleep in his arms and awaken to a brilliant tomorrow. But it was too late. He was the Merdad of her nightmares. She had opened the door. She had seen the bodies hanging from the walls without explanation, without justification. And without one, Sherazade knew what must be done. Khalid had to answer for such vile deeds, such rampant death. Even if he was her heir, even if she loved him beyond words. His guards were on edge and much too close. Their glaring torches and clattering footfall were not doing service to the torturous ache in his head, nor were they of benefit to the fire that battled for dominion over his eyes. When a nervous sentry dropped his sword with a noise to rouse the dead, it took all of Khalid's willpower not to snap the young man's arm from his shoulder. Instead, Khalid paused in the darkened corridor and pressed his palms to his brows.
"Leave," he grumbled to his guards.
"Saidi, leave." Khalid's temples pounded as the word reverberated down the halls. The guards glanced at one another before bowing and taking their leave. Jalal remained against the wall in somber watchfulness.
"That was rather childish," he chastised, once the soldiers had turned the corner.
"You are free to leave as well."
Khalid resumed his trek toward his chamber. Jalal cut in front of Khalid.
"You look terrible."
His eyes were bright, and his forehead was lined with worry. Khalid stared back at him, calm and aloof.
"I suppose you expect me to confide in you, following your honest assessment of a rather obvious condition. Forgive me, but I've had a trying evening, Captain Al-Hori."
"I'm truly concerned."
Khalid feigned bemusement.
"Don't be."
"If you refuse to talk about what happened tonight, I must continue to press the matter."
"And you will be met with disappointment at every turn."
"No, I won't."
Jalal folded his arms across his chest.
"You are a disaster. You flinch at the slightest noise, and you nearly ripped that poor boy's head off for dropping his sword."
"The boy was stumbling about, wielding an unsheathed blade. I find it fortunate he didn't trip and impale himself on the cold steel of his own stupidity."
"Your sarcasm gets more brutal with age, and with arrogance. It's not nearly as entertaining now."
Khalid glowered at his cousin. The blood pulsed along his neck and thrummed in his temples. Each beat blurred the lines of his vision. He shoved past Jalal.
"What were you doing tonight, Saidi?"
Jalal called after him.
"Do you realize you put our entire kingdom at risk when you discarded your weapon at that hired dog's behest? He could have killed you, and you would have left Khorasan without a ruler. You would have allowed Salim's mercenaries to leave us leaderless on the brink of potential war with Parthia."
He paused pointedly.
"All for the sake of a girl. One of so many."
At that, the frayed strands of Khalid's composure tore apart, and he turned the full force of his fury onto Jalal, whirling around and freeing his shamshir from its scabbard in a single fluid motion. He raised the curved edge of the blade until it was positioned a hair's breadth from Jalal's heart. Jalal stood still, his serenity at odds with the situation.
"You must love her a great deal, Khalid John."
After a beat, Khalid lowered his sword, his brow marred by pain and consternation.
"Love is a shade of what I feel."
Jalal grinned, but it did not reach his eyes.
"As your cousin, I'm glad to hear it. But as the captain of your guard, I would be lying if I told you I wasn't alarmed by tonight's events. You are not responsible to only one girl."
"I'm aware of that." Khalid sheathed his sword.
"I'm not so certain you are. If you plan on behaving in such a heedless fashion, I think it's time to tell Sherzad the truth."
"I disagree. Therefore, this discussion is over."
Khalid strode down the corridor once more, and Jalal walked at his side.
"She's family now. If you are willing to die for her, then it's time we entrust her with our secret."
Jalal pressed in a quiet voice.
"No."
He reached for Khalid's shoulder.
"Tell her, Khalid John. She has a right to know."
"And how would you react to such news?"
Khalid shoved his hand aside. "To the knowledge your life hovers on a precipice, bound by a mutable curse."
"My life is at risk every day, as is yours. Something tells me Shazi does not live in a world that denies this fact."
Khalid's eyebrows flattened.
"It doesn't matter. I'm not ready to tell her."
"And you never will be, because you love her, and we fight to protect those we love."
Jalal halted by the corridor leading to Khalid's chamber, and Khalid advanced down the marble and stone without a glance in his direction.
"Saidi,"
Jalal continued from behind him,
"make sure you summon the fakir tonight. You are a bowstring ready to snap."
Khalid shoved past the first set of doors into the antechamber and moved toward the entrance of his room. He paused before nodding to one of the guards, who twisted one of the bronze handles and pushed open the polyphone.